Welcome to the... No, I can't do that. Let's try another one. How about this? No, that won't work either. Let's try this. Yeah, I can get on board with that. Let's roll with it. Welcome to the Begin the Begin podcast. My name is Jeff Hillemeyer, and I'm on a mission to find out what makes people tick. Not just anyone, people who are making a profound impact on the world. I want to dig into their origin story and get to the root of why and how they do what they do. I hope you are as inspired coming out of these conversations as I am. Let's get into it.
This episode of the podcast is a bit different, as Alex Gonzalez is actually interviewing me about 48 and 48, an organization I co-founded in 2015. We talk about how 48 and 48 came to be, the stunning growth of the organization over the years, and how we went from thinking we were toast when COVID hit to pivoting and actually ending 2020 in a stronger position than we've ever been. And hey, while I've got you, definitely consider subscribing on whatever platform you're listening on. I have a lot of great guests lined up that, trust me, you won't want to miss. Okay, let's get into it.
All right, Jeff Hillemeyer, we are here to talk about something that I remember having been part of as an audience member at one point, but I know that it is one of the many things that Jeff Hillemeyer enterprises that you've launched. And I say that loosely because this is something that is really for the good of many people, but it's 48 and 48.
That's right.
And so I'd love to talk about more about this because I've just been in awe about 40 and 48 for many reasons. And we'll get into that. But for someone who's never heard about 48 and 48, and even of those who may have, who maybe doesn't completely understand it, what is 48 and 48?
So I describe 48 and 48 as a global hackathon that brings together hundreds of volunteers over a weekend to build 48 nonprofit websites.
And so the impact on that is, and I think there's a lot of little subtleties there that is a huge impact, you know, focusing on nonprofits, obviously, to help them. So why, so maybe let's get into that a little bit. Why did you think there was a problem there? I mean, what's what's the solve there that you're going for, and why was so? And obviously, it's highly successful, so it's very relevant. But what kind of led you down that thread?
Yeah, what actually got me there was not necessarily the end result of helping a nonprofit. It was unlocking, my team members, people at my company, who are digital marketers, creatives, developers, storytellers, user experience experts. Unlocking their ability to use their superpowers, their skills, the things that they had worked on building for years and years to do good in the world. And so, you know, what I found was this was, during the Engage days. Engage was my second company. We had that from 2008 to 2013. And what I saw was we were getting involved in the community and helping nonprofits, but we weren't doing it with our skills as much as we were doing it with our hands, right? So we would go and help deliver food or wrap presents, and those things are great and meaningful. But I kept wondering, is there a way that I can provide more benefit from the nonprofits by leveraging the skills of my team? And I tried actually a couple different things before I landed on the hackathon idea. I created an organization called Match. And what I was doing was matching up a almost like an advisory council of digital experts with nonprofits. So I would get five or six experts in various fields of digital marketing and then, you know, give them to a nonprofit, and they would spend a monthly meeting with them. The problem there was that when you're an underfunded, understaffed nonprofit, it's great to get advice, but that doesn't really help you. You don't have the bandwidth to really
they need stuff done.
Yeah, exactly. So that I did that for a few years and had, I think, like 17 teams working with over 40 nonprofits, and everybody was underwhelmed. It's one of the like business ideas that I had that failed, right? So I kept searching for what to do with that, and ultimately realized you're going to have to give the nonprofit something tangible, and the volunteer is going to have to build something tangible. And that's where I landed on the idea of a website.
So it's kind of interesting because I didn't realize that. So your initial start was about getting your team to effectively engage. So that's pretty cool. So what have you seen then with these nonprofits? Because obviously, even though it's a nonprofit, it's like a product, right? To your prior point, people have to be engaged in this, even if it's for good. So what did you notice in the nonprofits? What did you start hearing from them right away when you start with this idea? Obviously, they gravitated to it. So what were they telling you about the need they had for this?
Yeah, I think it was... it was more an insight that I had just from being around various nonprofits that the gateway to, you know, new volunteers and donors and communication was more and more becoming the website. Mm-hmm. You know, and again, this was probably 2010, 2011, 2012 when I was thinking about this. And so I just realized that that is the key, especially for a small nonprofit. They don't have the bandwidth to do much else. So I saw that as something that was easy to give a facelift to or to build from scratch and have it look very professional. But most of the websites of the small nonprofits are 5 or 10 years old. And right. In some cases, and I'm not making this up, it's done by the board chair's, you know, college right. son or daughter who builds it on the weekend to be nice. And that's great. But then they've got this, you know, very amateur looking website, which is the, you know, the doorway to their organization. So the need was pretty obvious to me. The question was, how do I mobilize people to do it and to help? And, you know, at first the idea was like, well, if I had them spend, you know, half a day once a month for 6 months, I did all this stuff and I'm like, gosh, that's just going to run out of steam. And ultimately I just said, well, what if you could do it in a hackathon style? Could a team instead just work all weekend and get it done? And once I thought one team could do it, I was like, well, if one team can do it, two teams can, and four teams can. And I just kept doing that until it sounded ridiculous. And I got to 48 in a weekend.
Now, take us through a 48 hour session. You know, what does that feel and look like when you engage? Yeah.
Well, I will say it's so much different than the very first event. The first event we put on in October of 2015, and you know, it was just a madhouse. We were disorganized. We basically, at that point, the very first one, the teams would be formed on the spot. So you would show up that Friday afternoon. So basically we kick off Friday 5 or 6 right. and we end Sunday 5 or 6. People would show up and we would basically start saying, okay, you're a creative. There's a team that has a developer and a project manager. We're going to put you with them. And then, by the way, in an hour, you have a call with your nonprofit and you're going to get all the information from them. Like the whole thing literally started that moment. Instead, now we're planning months in advance. The nonprofits have a portal that they're uploading all of their, you know, their creative brief and their right. collateral into. The teams are formed ahead of time. Most of the time they come as a team, which is so helpful. Like UPS right. will send, you know, 30 people and they'll have, you know, 3 teams of 10, and these people know wow. each other. So I would say about 75% of the teams now seem to be already connected. And then, you know, a quarter are meeting new people. But yeah, so the event works where we have a big kickoff. We, you know, give some talks, talk about how the weekend's going to go. Around 6, the teams go to their areas where they're working together. Usually that night they have a call with the nonprofit just to say, hey, we've had a couple hours. We've reviewed what you put into the system. Here's questions we have, you know, they get on track. Most of the time, no one stays the night anymore. The first couple, I never left. We would spend the night.
That seems like that'd be the fun of it.
Yeah, it's fun in concept.
Exactly. And then, I'm saying you could do it. I'm just saying it seems like fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Then you wake up at 3 a.m. and on a hard floor and you look around, and you're like, what am I doing? Now, some people do work all night. It's rarer than it used to be. But, you know, they come back early the next morning. They usually stay till 1 or 2 each night. I mean, so they're working late. They come back 8, 9, 10. We provide food the whole weekend when it's in person. So we'll talk about that. But right, up until COVID, it was all, you know, I think we did, I want to say like 17 or 18 events between when we started and then COVID, and they were all in person. And so we're paying for food, coffee, we're making sure they're hydrated and well-fed and well-caffeinated. And they're working all weekend. We actually have a 3 or 4 hour block of time on Saturday where the nonprofits get to come if they would like to. So they're not there other than coming on Saturday to have a chance to meet their team, you know, get some FaceTime with them. But then we do a lot of education sessions with the nonprofit leaders on, you know, best practices in email marketing, you know, tips on fundraising. We're just trying to help them overall. The teams keep working. And then ultimately we launch all the sites Sunday night. We have a big, you know, end of event ceremony. You know, again, when we're in person, there's drinks, there's celebration. And then, you know, our goal is to launch all 48 sites that Sunday, push them live.
And you've had some sports celebrities and you've had some, you know, local executives being part of the celebration as well, mm-hmm. too, if I recall.
Yeah, we sure have. What's interesting though, is we've stopped doing that a little bit more because that was taking so much time.
Really?
It was a big part of my initial vision was we're going to have somebody come and inspire them. We had work done come to the first event. You know, he's known for his humanitarian stuff. We actually did his nonprofit's website at the event, but we've slowed that down because it is a lot. And so you're like, all right, this is a volunteer organization. It's a nonprofit, 48 and 48 is. So, we do it when it comes naturally, but, that's an example. I thought that would be at every event. I thought that would be easy. I thought it would be huge. And I think now it's just like people get there, they're pumped, they're ready to get working. And, you know, as much as we can get out of their way and let them get started, the better.
And before, I do want to ask you about how you've had to pivot this year, this past year with COVID. But talk a little bit though about kind of where 48 and 48 is at, kind of the reach you've had, because this started obviously in our hometown here of Atlanta, mm-hmm. but is well beyond that right now.
Yeah, so we did that first event at Pond City Market in October 2015, and I thought that would be the one-time event. I didn't have any expectations it would be more than that. And as the weekend went on, especially on that Sunday, person after person was coming up to Adam and I. Adam Walker is my co-founder, and saying, "Hey, is there a list already where I can put my name on for next year?" And it blew us away because we knew nonprofits would appreciate it. We didn't really know the volunteers would be after working, you know, for so long on a weekend that they would want to do it again. So that led us to believe this could be something more than that. And I said, all right, well, we need to do this in 2016, the next year in Atlanta again, but another city. And you know what, if we can't pull it off in a city outside of, you know, our own city, then maybe it's just an Atlanta thing. So we did it in New York and Atlanta that next year. And it New York went great. New York loved it. So from that, we've grown the organization. We did, prior to COVID, we did 2 events in London. And so we were beginning to get more global. I think they call it 6 events in Atlanta, 5 in New York, 4 in Boston. So we had been growing. We had plans to do Los Angeles last year. And then when COVID hit, everything changed.
Yeah. So talk about that with COVID, because I'll tell you, there was such a power. And I remember being at one of your events at the kickoff over at Cox Enterprises. I want to talk a little bit more about that. And just the energy was crazy, and everybody getting in person. So I mean, this had to just, I imagine the decisions that faced you when COVID hit were pretty dramatic. So talk about how you pivoted with COVID. And what does that mean going forward too?
Yeah. So if you think about it, we were 100% an event organization.
Right.
That was our sole purpose, was to put on in-person, crowd everybody together events. And our number one, 50% of our revenue each year came from one donor, Delta Airlines.
Right.
So you talk about, you know, getting hit. Delta, you know, of course, had to pull their funding for the year, and they should have. And we could no longer do events. So suddenly, we were hit pretty hard, and I wasn't sure what was going to happen. We had one full-time employee and then a bunch of contractors and volunteers. We had to let go of our one long-term full-time employee. That was a very difficult call. We took a little time and really asked ourselves if we could do a virtual event. And what pushed us again was the volunteers. So Seema Parekh is the executive director, and you know, volunteer after volunteer, the committee she was running, were like, well, of course we're going to do, we're going to keep going. We're just going to do virtual events. And so we did a couple of test ones, in the summer. IBM, stepped up and helped us do one. Then we did a bigger one with State Farm. And what ended up happening is we realized that we can pull these off virtually. It's not the same. You know, the part of the excitement is everyone being together and building relationships. And, but we can still get the work done. And in a time when, we're all locked into our homes, 48 and 48 actually provided for its volunteers an opportunity to bond and spend time together, interestingly, still virtually. Yeah. So then the other thing that was amazing that happened is one of our struggles was always if a company said to us, hey, we're excited about having a 48 and 48 experience in our town. We then had to figure out logistically, can we pull it off in that town? So there was a small company in Toronto that really wanted to come and said, look, we've got 15 volunteers at our company. We can help you, you know, build momentum. And it's like, all right, well, we got to find a venue. We've got to find local sponsors. We've got to get 150 volunteers. Oh yeah. And we got to get 48 nonprofits. Yeah. Right. So every time we had, it was such a major decision. So now we had our bit. So every year, our big event is October. That's the we had it at Cox in 2019, Cox headquarters in Atlanta. And, you know, we get 400, 500, 600 people to the event now in Atlanta. And this year, because it was going to be virtual, we decided, you know what, we're going to make this a completely global event. And so that Toronto example, now we could say, absolutely, you can participate in our event. Every year in October, we have a big event and everybody's welcome to come participate. And so we had, again, 400 or 500 people volunteer that weekend. We had 15 countries represented. So we had a team in Africa. Wow. We had teams in Asia, all across Europe. Of course, Canada, like it was so exciting. And so you'd have these, you'd zoom into these teams that were meeting in these other countries. And, you know, we had to have a kickoff early in the morning on Friday for the time change. We've never had to do that. So it really changed the scope of what this organization will be. And I'm so proud of Seema and the team for embracing that pivot. And honestly, we're stronger than ever coming out of COVID when it could have cratered us completely.
Now, do you see then, if you start thinking about kind of a post-COVID 48 and 48, it sounds like there's going to be a virtual element you'll continue to look at, but are you also looking to get back to the experiential element in-person event as well too? How are you thinking of that?
Yeah, I think it's definitely a hybrid. Yeah. I think we'll have less in-person, more virtual, but I would imagine we have a couple of big tentpole events where we'll have them in person. For example, this coming year, 2021, we're the other thing that's happened over the years, by the way, is corporations have wanted to do their own 48 and 48. So that's something I never would have envisioned. So State Farm for years now has had done a 48 and 48 State Farm only event where they get a couple hundred of their State Farm employees working on nonprofits that they care about. And so it's become an internal element as well for businesses. So this coming year, we're going to have three of what I would call our own events. We're going to have a women only event. So we're going to have a couple hundred women volunteers building 48 websites. We're going to have a social justice event that's going to focus on building nonprofit websites for founders of color or nonprofits that are focused on social justice efforts. Right. And then we're going to have our big October event. And then in between there, we're going to have a lot of corporate events. So, you know, State Farm will have one, IBM will have one. So what probably would be happening is we'd probably be doing the women's, the social justice, and the October event in person with a virtual component to those and allowing people to zoom into those and be a part of it. That's my guess, that we would still do those in person because there's something exciting there. But I can't imagine us doing more than a couple in person going forward because the logistics are just so difficult.
Yeah, and it helps you focus on purpose and what you're doing it too. But you're right. I mean, the energy of those in-person events are tremendous, and it probably feeds through virtually as well too. But
in a community
like Atlanta, I'm sure that you know, the power of the volunteerism, and particularly you have such a young group that's focused on this, is to be able to get together, it has to be such a powerful part of this as well.
It's huge. One of the exciting things that I always love is teams that come year after year, and I mean, our retention of volunteers is really, really something I'm proud of. They'll create their own t-shirts for the event. So they come up with team names, and they'll create, so they roll in that first day, even though we give them a 48 and 48 shirt, and they're wearing their own team just for that. We had somebody make shoes, 48 and 48 shoes. So people get really passionate about it. And I think if we don't ever go back to in-person, we'll lose some of that for sure.
Absolutely. Well, a few things before we wrap up, but you mentioned something about, you know, there's going to be corporate versions, and we just talked about, you know, and you and I, you know, when we met up at the Cox Enterprises one, and of course you've had some big companies as partners. How'd you get, but the corporate support has been pretty good, pretty strong for something that's focusing on smaller nonprofits. So how'd you get such good traction with big corporates wanting to be part of 48 and 48?
Yeah, I will tell you, you know, if you think about 48 and 48, there's three constituency groups that we have. There's the volunteers,
right?
There's the nonprofits, and then there's the funders, which to this point has been mostly corporate. The most difficult to get of those three by a landslide is the nonprofits.
Wow.
That's our biggest struggle, is getting enough nonprofits into the system. You know, there's lots of reasons we've heard. One of them literally has been, we just can't do it because our board member's child built our website. Like literally we've heard that they couldn't participate. But I think people aren't sure that whether it's a scam, you know, free website, is that really a thing?
You know, sell me something and all that, which by the way, and just sort of real quick, but it's amazing here, because some of the things you're talking about with these small nonprofits are the same things for small businesses.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really the psychology of it, the dynamics, the need that they might have outdated front doors with a website. So it's kind of fascinating to, as you talk about this, about the parallels and analogs between those two and how you're trying to solve this for,
you know,
for
one of my dream partnerships is American Express. And we've had some conversations, we haven't been able to move it forward, but you know, they're small business focus. I've always thought, number one, they'd want to get involved from the nonprofits because those are small businesses, but also there's no reason American Express couldn't donate a certain amount of money to 48 and that we couldn't build 48 for-profit small business websites in a weekend and use that money as fundraising. So there's definitely options for us to go in that direction. But getting back to the corporate, I got to tell you, like, first of all, if we ever get a corporation to send volunteers, we got them. We got them. That's how State Farm happened. That's how IBM happened, where people come, they love it. They bring it back to their company and say, we got to get involved. And that's where things open up. We have a brand new, really exciting sponsor and partner, Verizon. So Verizon found out about us because someone at our New York event had a connection to Verizon, had such a great time at our event, told somebody at Verizon, and then Verizon reached out to us and said, look, we've got this big grant for new partnerships in 2021. You guys should fill it out. We did. They coached us along and we got the relationship. So now this year we'll be doing a big Verizon event. They'll be involved in all of our events. So I think corporations are looking for a way. There's a lot of push for skills-based volunteering at companies. You know, a company like UPS has a goal each year of their employees using their skills to donate. So I think we serve a need there. I think we also are a nice packaged way for them to have employee morale and get excited about, you know, doing things in the community together. And right now we're an interesting way to do that safely and make a big impact virtually. So I think we fit something nice for the corporations to get involved. You know, being in Atlanta, there's so many amazing businesses and you know, large corporations that, you know, all we have to do is get in front of somebody and usually they're in.
Well, and I think what I just love about a firm from an Atlanta, getting kind of Atlanta specific, but I think it applies to any community like this, but getting very specific to Atlanta, we have this just growing tech community, which is startup and corporate. And we have incredible creative community, which is not just performing arts, but also, you know, experience, digital arts, all that. And the blend of that, the need for that community to want to connect. This is why I think 40 and 48 has done so well in Atlanta. It's just, we have such a community that I don't think we've even really appreciated how strong this community is. And I love how you blend this tech and creative and marketing community together for it. So I think it makes perfect sense that it's thriving in Atlanta. And I could see how a corporation would want to get engaged, because I think the talent wants to get engaged into the community. And it's great to have someone from a big corporation sitting next to someone, you know, from an age, smaller agency or whatever. And it creates a great, really strong community. So as you start, Jeff, as we wrap up here, so thinking about the legacy, you know, you want to leave behind with 48 and 48, and either personally or professionally. And by the way, part of this legacy hit me too. I believe it was, I don't know if it was New York or which one it was, but I remember that, now you've taken your kids or mm-hmm. your son up to, you know, travel with you on 40 and 48. So what legacy do you want to leave behind in terms of what 40 and 48 does, either for yourself and your family or for just for the world?
Oh, such a great question. Well, my first goal with anything I'm doing like this is, you know, will it survive without me?
Right.
And it, you know, 48 and 48 absolutely is at a point where, you know, I could disappear and it would continue to thrive. So the thing that I love the most about 48 is that, you know, my personal purpose is to have an outsized positive impact on the world. So what I have been able to do with so many great partners, and again, Adam, my co-founder with 48 and 48, is to give people a way to do much more volunteering than they ever would have done. Mm. So as I look back at the thousands of volunteers we've had, and you know, we've done over 20 events, and you know, you can do the math. I think about all the time those people spent feeling great about doing it. Doing it with their friends, telling their other friends about all the good they did at 48 and 48. I just think like they're probably volunteering more in their lives anyway because of that. They're probably infecting other people to get involved. So there's a ripple effect that I feel really proud of. Again, I don't know if I'd use the word legacy, but I think that that's what makes me the most proud about where 48 and 48 is. That it is having a bigger effect than I'll ever know. Because by the way, I didn't even mention all the help that the nonprofits have received right. and how many more volunteers they've received and how many more dollars they've been able to raise. And so there's this, I'll never know what it, the effect it's having, but I can see more clearly how it affects the volunteers. And to me, that's the most special thing. If I can help somebody find a way to do good, that's really special.
Well, Jeff, well, look, I'm a fan. I think it's one of the more innovative ways to really embrace kind of the new economy in order to do good with what you're doing in 48 and 48. So look, you know, I don't know about being there, you know, overnight, you know, 3 or 4 a.m., but, you know, I'll plan to be at one of when we start going live in person. I'll probably do a coffee run or something. But looking forward to bringing, you know, some of my kids over to be part of it. So I encourage everybody to make sure you follow 48 and 48 as it still continues virtual and as we start getting into kind of the new models. A lot of great things. Thanks, Jeff. And looking forward to more with 48 and 48 and everything you're doing for the community.
Thanks, Alex. And I just appreciate your interest and wanting to have this conversation. I like to think of 48 as the best kept secret in Atlanta. It always surprises me when I run into like a CMO or something that's never heard of it. And then you tell them and they're like, oh my gosh, we got to get sure. involved. So anything helps. So I appreciate it. It was great to chat.
Right.
Wow, you made it to the end of the podcast. I didn't think people did that anymore. Well, since I still have you, I'd love for you to do two things. First, subscribe to this podcast on whatever platform you're listening on. That way you'll be alerted as soon as I post my next one. And second, I'd love for you to subscribe to my email newsletter. I send out an email every week or two, and it's really where I share my more personal thoughts and ideas. Plus, I give stuff away sometimes. You can find the sign up at my blog, jeffhillemeyer.com. And I really do appreciate you listening.